The Trader Cobb Crypto Show, talking business in blockchain.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Trader Cobb Crypto Show. Today's guest, it's Leo Gantz, who is the founder and editor of Wealth Research Group. We're going to get into some pretty good conversations about markets in general. Thanks so much for being on the show, Leo. I appreciate your time.
I really appreciate the chance. Thanks, Greg.
Excellent. So look, mate, why didn't you tell us a little bit about your story? Because from what I understand, we've got a very, very similar background and beginning. So if you could share that with us, that'd be great.
Yeah. In my case, what happened to me was my father went bankrupt. He had a furniture business, went bankrupt when I was 13. So I was literally at that age, I think, Greg, where I had more desires, right? Like more than an ice cream. I wanted to date girls and I wanted to go, here and there, etc.
Yep.
And suddenly, the liquidity hose was drained and I didn't know what to do. But I wanted to get my license for driving a couple of years later and everything like that. So that's what's going through the mind of a 13-year-old. Mm. And I went to a clothing store next to my house. And for 2 weeks, I just hung around for 2 hours a day and studied the brands in the store and went home, back home, studied it further. It was like 1997. So we didn't have internet or something. It was harder to study it. But,
yep.
But anyways, 2 weeks go by, and every day I tell him, hey, you should hire me. But I'm like 1.49 meters, very short kid at that point. Not easy to employ and trust a guy like that. So after 2 weeks of just hanging around there and every day showing him I know more about his brands and everything like that, a woman comes into the store, and I help him close a big sale. And he says, you're hired. It was $4 an hour. And that's basically the beginning of the accumulation phase. But it helped me really to have a lot of confidence, Greg, because I took like the first week of salary, I printed out these flyers, handed out in the neighborhood for babysitting services. And then since I played basketball, I upsold a lot of the parents that had boys and not girls into doing some coaching for basketballs for their kids who were 6 years old or 7 years old, just the fundamentals of dribbling, etc. And painting decks, whatever. Until the age of 16, I saved like $20,000. And I got my parents to sign a waiver, and then I could, as a minor, start investing in mutual funds, which was what the banker told me. You got to do it. You got to have mutual funds. So this was 2000, right after the bust, right after the dot-com. I didn't know that, right? This is in hindsight, like 20 years later, I know it was a great entry point. But at that point, I don't know nothing. And then my grandfather gives me two books about investing, because I told him I'm going to start investing. So he gives me one book from Peter Lynch and another one about Warren Buffett.
Yep.
From Peter Lynch, I learned that his daughter, who's a teenager, helped him find his biggest winners because it was brands she knew.
Yeah.
Like Dunkin' Donuts and basketball cards, all that kind of stuff. And from Buffett, I learned the power of brands and how important it is to find a moat. So a company that even if many new entrants come to the market,
it still shines.
It just helps it even shine more because everyone just fails. And an easy example would be what would happen if, like, Coca-Cola has like $35 billion cash right now, something of that nature. What would happen if I gave you $35 billion? Could you build a Coca-Cola? The answer is probably no, because the intangible assets, the brand awareness, the loyalty from customers, the fact that it's in the right area in the shelves, not below your eyes, all that is 120 years of, or whatever, how many years of improvement. Yeah. And so my first stock was an apparel manufacturer. The biggest one in the world. Nobody knows the parent company, but everybody knows the brands like Timberland, John Sport, Kipling. They're all under the same umbrella. Nobody knows it, but I invested in that company. Been holding it for 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's performed quite well then.
Yes, it has actually. It's the price is up 17-fold, and the dividend is up 600%. So it's really like buying a house for $100,000, it's now $1.7 million, and the tenant is paying you six times the rent. So what I wanted to share with you is that my father went bankrupt then for a second time when I was 18. And that was rough because that bankruptcy was on a personal level. The first one was like a corporate one. So he had some savings left. This one drained him.
Yep.
And then he got into business again. And when I was 23, he went bankrupt for the third time. And I think to me, it was a real blessing for three reasons. Like if I want to, you know, turn that lemons into lemonade, one, it taught me to really do my homework. Mm. And I think that has helped me a lot. And that's the reason why I launched Wealth Research Group, the newsletter, because I wanted to share with people, because I've read like hundreds and hundreds of books, really delved into entrepreneurship. And, you know, I gave up my 20s.
Yeah.
I didn't have I really dove into this and studied it a lot. And I think the second thing is my father's health deteriorated incredibly, like two heart attacks.
Third bankruptcy.
After the second one, even.
After the second one.
The third one plunged him into like a depression. It just not nice, right? Mm. And I think that really helped me to put things in perspective.
Yeah.
But I think it also taught me a lot about leverage, Craig, and you know, not to use it unless you're either a freaking genius or you know you have this. Yeah. You really want to be careful because that is what really drove the bankruptcies, leverage.
Yeah.
A very smart man. Like every merchant in the same business say, you know, you would look at him and say, that's the smartest guy in the room. That's the smart, but leverage and at the wrong times.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a little bit about me and,
that's pretty cool. Like you. That's pretty cool. I mean, so we're the same age. We both started at 16. The audience knows my story. I was doing chocolate coated snakes, invested my first, you know, I started having businesses at about six. Didn't know it was business back then. Just I knew stuff, so I sold stuff, right? Made it, sold it. But more so importantly, I mean, you said that over the last 18 years, this investment that you made, your first investment, did 17 times growth with the 600% dividend yield increase. Now you entered into
crypto. It's called VF Corp.
VF Corp.
Yeah, VF Corp. If people want to check it out, just you know for themselves. But I don't think it's a bargain right now.
No, nothing's a bargain right now in the traditional market world. Well, not nothing, but not a lot.
Yes,
because you know you took 18 years to get your 17 times growth, right? Then you went ahead in what 2016 March when you wrote a report on Ethereum at $12. Tell us about that because obviously you got a lot more than
2017
times out of that, right?
Yeah, it was March of 2017. Now in 2016.
So 17, just sorry,
a year and a half ago. So I learned about Bitcoin when it was $5 and I didn't pursue it. And a few months later, I heard about it again. It was $9, but just heard, hey, there's a thing called Bitcoin. It's up five, you know, just talking at a parking lot, so not like a business meeting or something. But then I was skiing in Colorado, and I hear these three people in the lobby of the hotel I'm in talking about digital gold. And at that point, I was a gold investor in 2013, invested in mining stocks after the Great Recession. So I had a nice idea of why people buy gold and why it's important right now in our day and age to have some sort of a protective portfolio as well, a chaos hedge, I call it. They talk about digital gold, very young guys as well. So I go to the bar, I buy three beers, and I sit down and say, look, I've been buying gold for years. Can you show me what digital gold, what do you mean by that? And they show me Bitcoin. It's at 19. So I tell them, I already know Bitcoin. I didn't know it was 19, but show me. So they show me whatever you can show a guy for the first glance, like for 3 hours. And I buy into it. And a month later, it was 119. Like,
wow.
The timing couldn't have been better. Yeah. And obviously, you know, in stocks, when you have 19 going to 119, you're out. So that's obviously what I did.
Yep.
And then with Wealth Research Group, I covered it again when it was 400. So that was really early 2017. And then I learned about Ethereum right after that, going to conferences, etc. And it was $12. Like you said, we covered it in the newsletter. So the newsletter is very, you know, it's big picture, but it's also I cover stuff. So if I really like something,
you'll put your thoughts in there.
Yes, exactly. And that Ethereum went from $12 to like over $1,000. So people had a chance to
make a lot of money if they took the advice. So this Wealth Research Group, you've been doing it for a few years now. I mean, the growth of, I mean, obviously off the back of some phenomenal calls, Ethereum being one of them. Do you find that it's mostly crypto people, or, you know, if you, you know, if you've got, I don't know, let's say pull a random number out of thin air, so it's easy to break down. If you've got 100,000 on your list, would you say 80,000 would be crypto? Or, I mean, what sort of a mix have you got as far as people participating that are there for certain things? Or is there lots of different, I notice there's lots of different newsletters, but are they all separate databases? I mean, what's, no, where's your growth coming from is what I'm trying to work out.
Yeah, it's one database, and it's one newsletter. It's one, yep, flagship newsletter. We cover many things.
So they're them. Different. I got it.
Within them, there are crypto currency people. What happened with us is in the third quarter of 2017, we covered the first ever blockchain miner to go public, and it went up 900% in 6 weeks.
December. That was the mad period. Yep.
Yeah. And what happened was we released a full length micro documentary on this, and another channel picked it up, and it went to like 400,000 views on, wow, YouTube, and it helped to drive a lot of people into our specific newsletter that talks about cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, etc. But in 2018, we have not covered any cryptocurrency. And the reason is because what happened to me in January of 2018 is my partner called me and he said, look, our maid just asked me to open a trading account for her so she can trade crypto. I think this is like we're approaching a problematic, yeah, area here. And I heard about this thing before. It's called the mother indicator. It's when your mother wants to start investing. Yep. So.
Well, it used to be the shoe shiner on Wall Street, didn't it, back in the Jesse Livermore days?
Yeah, exactly.
Shoe shiners talking to you more about stocks and shares, and you know that's time to get out.
Or the taxi driver, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but anyways, no matter how you hear about the story, when you hear something like that, it's kind of weird, right? Because it's not something natural.
I don't mean that
in a negative way.
No, I know what you mean.
But I mean that it was madness. So, yeah. And judging from 2013 when I got in and I saw that on four occasions, Bitcoin went down 85 to 95%. I said, okay, if this is going to happen again, the price will hit like $3,000 per coin. So there's literally, this is the time to either stop buying or better yet, exit. So we haven't covered any new coins in 2018. I am getting very bullish right now because it is 85 to 95% down, but I'm not buying yet because I think it's important to see what happens in June 24th when Buck goes and starts being live, and we'll see the platform and if we're going to see a lot of crypto people, cryptocurrency institutional investors come in and brokerage firms, etc., then it will not be the end of cryptocurrency. But if they don't, it's going to be a very, it might be even an identity issue. We'll need to see what happens with cryptocurrencies in general, because you have to educate yourself really.
Absolutely. Well, that's what we do. I mean, it's the whole point of what we of speaking with people like you and trying to help people into it. I mean, from my point of view as a trader, it's a volatile asset class. So I love it. You know, I can go long, I can go short now too, which sure. Basically opens it up to me in all sorts of ways. I am also an investor in this space, but I'm also looking, like, blockchain's fascinating. It's another arm of business that that can help a lot of businesses to cut some costs, to be more, maybe not more efficient in some of the applications, because a decentralized blockchain is slower because it's not in a centralized area, right? That may change, but it is something that is trustless. I don't think blockchain technology is going to go anywhere, and it's up to people like us and the listeners and viewers to decide what they think is going to be a good application that's going to have longevity. And you're right, education is so, so important. I see people out there trading and doing all sorts of things where you just go, unfortunately, that's not going to serve you well long-term. You know, it just isn't. Everyone was, you know, a genius last year in the bull run. Well, even a turkey can fly in a hurricane, right? So it's about having that deep understanding. And A lot of people have forgotten to invest in themselves. They've just been chasing the get rich quick. And there's been a massive reality check this year. And I think that's good. As long as people take it as an education as opposed to a capitulation. You know, if they throw all their toys out of the pram, they're missing out on one of life's most important lessons. And I hope that people understand that, because it's from your losses you learn your most. Would you agree?
Sure. I wrote a report for your show because I've listened to previous shows. I know you have a very sophisticated audience. I wrote 11 unique bear market strategies that people can access if they go to wealthresearchgroup.com/bear.
Yep.
They can download 11 unique strategies. And I think what you're talking about is exactly that. If you learn how to work through bear markets, then you really have a chance to succeed in bull markets. But if you really do not trade or invest through bear markets, not with cryptos, but with
in general,
in general, you're losing on a lot. And let me explain why. People are very fearful of bear markets, but traditionally, if in the last 100 years, if you go back even to 1918 when I first saw the stats, the dividend component of investing has been responsible for about 40% of the gains historically for investors. In other words, when you become a shareholder, now you own a business, and that business does not pay out a dividend, it does not mean it's a bad business, but it means it is relying on the fact that management believes that they can do better work with the money, with the profits, than you can.
Yeah.
And they can grow it better than you can. That's what Berkshire Hathaway is all about, for example. There are companies that don't pay a dividend because they don't make a profit. And when you invest in those companies, you're actually speculating, because a speculation is basically an investment into a business or a company or an asset where you can't predict the rate of return.
Yep.
Whereas investing is with a predictable rate. It doesn't mean it's going to be exactly what you think, but long term you can predict the rate of return.
Well, the interesting thing on that is, to jump in with that, to sort of back you up on that, that it depends on what the investor is looking for too, right? I mean, if they're a retiree and they need a yield, then they're going to want to have the dividend. So they're more passive investors. They don't need to see it grow in value. They're after an income. If you're speculating on growing a portfolio, you want to make sure that you're putting it in places where they can actually see growth. And one of the things that I always found fascinating was the general public's lack of understanding for what a dividend was. They would look at it and go, well, I still get my 7% on this stock. And you go, yeah, but that 7% is at a discount of 30% against the share price, because the share price has fallen 30% from what you bought it for. Oh, yeah, but I still get 7%. It's like, yeah, but you 7% on a 30%, like you don't quite understand what the dividend's actually from and what it means and what your investment is. Just because you get a dividend, you get a check of $500 at the end of the quarter or whatever it may be, it doesn't equate to a positive outcome. You know, if that's your financial level of intelligence, God, good luck. So you know what I mean? Like, people just don't understand it that well.
I think, you know, with every profession, even if you want to be a teller at the bank, you need to go through like 4 months of a course or training, and they take you through everything. And when you want to open a Fidelity account, you can do it in 2 days of signing documents. You're there. You're an investor, right?
Yep.
There are many professions that have created billionaires. Say real estate, for example, which created 76% of America's millionaires and billionaires thus far. Like, three quarters of America's rich people come from construction and housing. But it's not a profession, right? In terms of, it's not an academic profession.
Yeah.
People don't grow up and say, okay, I want to be a real estate developer. I need to go to college to do this.
Yep.
So, and I think the same thing happens with several professions that don't have a traditional path to becoming an investor, a real estate developer, a network marketer, for example.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that become millionaires from network marketing. And man, I looked at that industry. There's no proper training. You get trained by basically someone who puts you into the business, yep. for example. So I think that is something that happens with investments. And luckily for me, really luckily for me, I because I was 16 and also I had a lot of time. I used to, in school, you know, I come in at 8:30 and I put the investment book inside the history book. So I'm reading about stocks when she's teaching about the
pyramids.
You know. Yeah. So I had time, and it's time is obviously an insanely important resource. And also, yeah. you know, you had your parents covering most of the living expenses. So you're not even worried about that. So you are saving, yeah. is what I'm saying. Even if you're working, you're not diluting the savings.
Yeah.
The Western world has become very, very hard for just being a wage earner. It's just very, it's very hard. And if you don't compensate for that with proper investing, then you really are going to race in circles for many, many years. In fact, I don't know if you're ever going to get out of it. Mm. Whereas I've read personally about janitors and people that are low income people that have invested in companies throughout their lives. And when they come to their 60s, some of them have, you know,
they're tie broke.
No, I'm well. Oh,
sorry, the other side. So the other yes. side is you work all your life and you retire broke. The other side.
Yes, yeah, and but what I'm talking about is people that actually, like a janitor.
Yeah, who, they invest who, and keep.
Yes, and not and only that, Craig. Right. They invest like in you know the janitor at UPS. Famous story. Invested in UPS shares, and you know he retired with $7 million. Mm. So it's and what he did was not only did he hold for the long term and stay on his dividend, just get his dividends, he went a step further. So if you really want
the dividends,
yes, if you reinvest the dividends, what's called compounding, is it's just amazing because it doesn't happen with real estate, for example, unless you buy on leverage. Yeah. So. When you buy a house, let's say for cash, $100,000, the tenant pays $1,000. You can't take that $1,000 and buy more of that same house with it. But if you can buy another house with it, yeah. you're using the tenant's money to get rich.
Yep.
Or to get richer.
Yep.
And with investments, you can in stocks, you can do the same thing. When you get the quarterly dividend, you can reinvest that dividend into buying more shares. Now, that way, you simply own more shares of the company, which means your dividend actually increases the next time because the dividend is just your proper distribution of the profits. Now, with this company specifically that I told you about, that I invested in, they are actually a dividend aristocrat, which is a part of 52 companies that actually grow their dividends every year without fail for over 25 consecutive years. There are only 52 companies that have been able to
wow.
do that. And it means a lot about the company. They can grow through anything, any financial environment. The Fed raises rates, lowers rates, the Great Recession of 2008, et cetera, and they're able to grow. And that shows a lot about the underlying business. If you go to the Wealth Research website, if you look at the top menu, there's a special reports tab. And that's like a gloss, an aggregate library of reports that I've accumulated over the years that
yep.
Readers can or listeners can have a
like the archives.
Yeah, and but on the side of it, on the left side, you'll see it's where it says wealth stocks, and that's I wrote like six reports on companies that are within this dividend aristocrat group, so you can take a look at what sort of companies they are. I'm personally. Right now, as we're doing this, obviously the markets are going through a turbulent time. But on the flip side, if you were already ready to buy some companies, but they were too expensive, this is a great time to look into those companies again because their price has gone down while their dividend, nothing has happened to it, or it even increased. And the underlying business, nothing has happened to it.
Yeah.
There are many companies, you know, Intel doesn't go into less computers in the last 3 weeks because of what's going on. I'm not saying buy Intel, but I'm giving you an idea that people, you know, wake up in the morning, they go and buy toilet paper from Kimberly-Clark, Kimberly Clark's
still getting pumping, but this
yes, exactly.
Yep.
So
opportunity is around right now in many markets at the moment. Buffett says it, you know, be fearful when people are greedy and be greedy when people are fearful. And at the moment, I'm not suggesting that we found the bottom in any market right now. I don't typically pick bottoms. If we've got a good, strong trend, I can definitely call areas of retracement that I believe in. But at the moment, especially in crypto markets right now, there's nothing there really to talk about beyond the fact that we're in a strong downtrend. And that's, you know, there is some signs, but until we see some, you know, bigger signs, I'm very, very careful as to what's going on in that space as well. So, Leo, mate, look, where would people find out more? Tell us how they can get more access to what you do, mate.
Best thing is to go to wealthresearchgroup.com, the main homepage. You'll see where you can sign up for the newsletter. That's where I release the highest priority, top quality information. It doesn't even go on the website, so it's just unique.
Straight to the newsletter.
Yeah, it's straight to the newsletter. If you're looking to even get more information, like more data and PDF reports and everything we do, go to the special reports tab and you can download any of them. When I started Wealth Research, it was 3 years ago. It was just my way of transmitting what I am doing personally and what I am analyzing and researching, what I feel about the markets, to the reader. And the reason is for the same reason you're doing it. It's for education and sharing a passion for educating the because it's just so rotten.
The current system is not really working for our age group either, and the younger generation as well are getting tired of it. So there's new opportunities, new people to teach them, and we've got to play our part. We've been there for a long time for our age. We have a lot more experience than most people that are out at our age, but we've got experience with our own money. That's the thing. It's not playing with, you know, I'm not sitting at a trading desk for Goldman or for Fidelity or for anyone else for that matter. It's been my money. It's been me doing it. It's been me taking those lessons on board. And I can't think of anything. Like, for me, it's difficult to take people's money on to trade. I prefer to not do that at all because, you know, there are drawdowns. There are periods where you have to go through times. And I'm cool with that because I've been through it a lot of times. So, mate, people should definitely jump on that your reports and get going on that and find out what there is to find out.
Just to let you know another thing, because you touched on a very important point, if we have another 30 seconds or so.
Yeah.
In Wall Street and just in general, institutional hedge funds and everyone else that manages your money, it's very hard for them to tell clients that they're sitting on cash. And so usually with funds, they have about 5% invested in cash or 10% at the most invested in cash. But as an individual, you know, usually I sit on about 20 to 25% of the portfolio in cash. So that's four times more than what the industry's norm or standard is.
But more versatile, hey?
Yeah, because we don't have to answer to clients that are saying, hey, what are you doing with my money? What are you doing with my money, etc. Because I think cash is a position. Mm. When the S&P 500 goes down 15% in a month and a half and your cash did, let's say, minus 0.7 because of inflation.
You're up.
You're not only are you up, but you're able to exploit.
Yep.
50%. So cash is an important position. And you can just look at Warren Buffett, who's telling you, he's guiding you, he's telling you, I'll never hold less than $25 billion in cash at Berkshire. They have over $100 billion right now in cash. Wow. And over $100 billion, which is... if you look at the market cap, that's an enormous amount of cash. And this is just to tell also the listeners, there's a lot of cash on the sidelines with very smart people. Mm. And a lot of people are talking about an 80 to 90% drop in the general markets. Just remember that we're not at a liquidity event like we had in 2008. There's so much cash out there, but they're just not buying because
For a better price.
Yes, they are. And they're waiting for a better price. But, you know, people are expecting something like we had in 2008. That was forced liquidation. People had to sell because of margin calls. There's a lot of margin right now, but definitely not what we had in 2008. So don't wait for a 70 to 80% drop, because it may never happen in our lifetimes. Who knows, right? It's just not that normal. 2008 was very abnormal.
Yep.
And you really need to, and crypto has made people think that, hey, 80% drops are an everyday occurrence. So just remember that, because to find something that's 20% off or 30% off or 50% off, that is an amazing scenario. It doesn't mean it's a buying opportunity, but it means
that's right.
Take a closer look.
You have to have a close look, because what you don't want to do is people say, oh, well, the one that's fallen the most can go back up the most. That's the crypto brain in people saying that. It's not true at all. There's a reason companies fail.
Sure.
Leo, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, mate. I really appreciate your time. I look forward to being on your show coming up.
Exactly.
Don't forget to go to wealthresearchgroup.com. Leanne Gantz, it's been an absolute pleasure. The founder and editor of Wealth Research Group. I had the words around the wrong way. Thank you so much for your time. I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Craig.
The Trader Cobb Crypto Podcast is hosted by Craig Cobb. All Trader Cobb courses, products, and tools can be found at tradercobb.com, because experience matters.